self-love journey, we're gonna do these. I have these empowering questions. I have two different decks, and we're just going to pick random cards out of the deck and talk about that topic. So, Sean, shuffle the cards, and you can introduce the topic today.
Hi guys, how's it going? Today we're gonna talk about who am I? What can I do to facilitate personal growth? That's kind of a loaded question, I think.
Yep, it's two-part series.
Personally, it's one that I have a lot of issues with. So, the second part of the question, I've done quite well with.
Right.
And I think, personally, from my experience, I think you need to dive into some personal growth stuff before you can really discover who you are. And I think that's what held me back a lot when I first started therapy, was this kind of not really knowing who I was, where I was going, what I stood for anymore. Like, I was in such a dark place that everything just kind of got muddled into one big, like, I don't really care. So after I started my personal growth journey, that's when I started to kind of realize that, you know, myself, who I really am, is still kind of in there. It was just deep and buried and under a whole bunch of depression. So yeah, I think this should be a pretty good topic to talk about.
Well, it's a strange question to ask, who are you? Like, in what context? Who am I in what context? In the world, or if you had to define yourself?
Yeah, and again, like, that's something I struggled with. Like, I came in here with a little bit of, like, an identity crisis. I found it frustrating because I could put on a face when I was around certain people, or a mask, and I could kind of become who I thought I was, or who I thought I should be, or who I wanted to be. But it was emotionally exhausting. So, like, if I went out for a social gathering, I'd be able to put on that mask for a little bit of time and be fun and upbeat. And then on the way home, I'd completely crash emotionally, physically, everything. And I'd be right off for like a week. It took me a long time to recharge. And a lot of that kind of came from not feeling like I was putting out a genuine version of myself into the world. And I think that was a really hard lesson to learn, that you can just kind of show up and be genuine, and the people that love you are still going to love you. And the people that fade away, like, that's okay. Like, there's a lot of friendships, I think, that we hold on to in life that have kind of run their course a little bit. So if somebody's in my life these days that isn't really helping to facilitate personal growth, or I can have really intense conversations with, or that I absolutely love and adore, like, it's okay to kind of let those people slide out the back door and just kind of, you know, I'm not saying completely cut them off, but, like, I just decided that I was going to start matching energy or effort levels. So if somebody in my life put in very little effort to maintain the friendship, that's what they get in return. And it freed me up a lot to be able to kind of start working on myself.
I find that same thing as well. Like, for me, I really, when I'm going through something or I'm trying to figure out something, I have to be quiet and I have to be still. And I just think, you're right when you say, if people don't understand that, like, if you don't know that that's just who I am, like, I've been like that for, like, dealing with my mom and certain challenges that have come up, that's how I handle it. I've had to do it alone. So, you know, like, at this stage of my life, even though I don't have that responsibility, I still use that method to, like, when I have to focus, like, laser sharp focus, I have to drown the noise, right? And the white noise is solitude for me, where I can just hone in and get all my things done. And what, for me, when I know that I'm being distracted, it's when I'm feeling stressed, overwhelmed, I have a lot of anxiety, and that's because people are distracting me, and they don't intentionally distract me, but I need that same thing that you were saying. I need a cheerleader as well. Like, I love to motivate people, and I love people to, you know, even my friends, family, clients, whatever. I like to try to facilitate the best version of you. And I just find sometimes nobody's doing that for me. So I have to be my own cheerleader and go like, okay, Karen, what's your best version of you? So who am I in the grand scheme of things? And so in order for me to do that, I really have to just quiet, and then the answer will come to me. And then I find, like, when I do that, when I actually just put myself first, which is like such a hard thing. I know for a lot of some people it's very easy, but for me it is so hard. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I can't answer that. But I find it very difficult to put myself first, and I almost feel so bad when I have to tell somebody, honestly, I really can't talk right now.
I think a lot of that probably stems from the fact that you were a caregiver for so long too,
yeah.
Right? So like the idea of putting yourself before somebody else, and I mean it even comes right down to like your line of work and, you know, the path that you've chosen. That's a very difficult thing to do. Probably something that you should work on. Definitely. But I mean, everybody has something. So like, for example, you said solitude is something that allows you to recharge.
Yeah, I need it.
For me, there's a certain level. So like, solitude for me is demise. Like, that's the end. If I'm solitude, like, my brain will eat me alive immediately.
Okay.
So it just goes to show everybody's a little bit different. I love to be alone and recharge a little bit, but if I'm at the point where I'm withdrawing, that is my brain eating me alive. So some of the personal growth stuff I did to help that and to help facilitate my alone time into a much more of a healthy manner would be journaling.
Well, okay, let me provide context in my solitude.
Yes.
The solitude isn't just me sitting in a room.
No,
my solitude
of course.
Is working through 3 chapters of a dissertation,
yes.
Getting home projects done.
That's perfect.
It's like, you know, like I have, it's never not busy. So the solitude is, I don't have time for an hour conversation, or I don't have time to actually go to lunch and just be social right now. I actually have work to do that I haven't been doing because I've been putting that first, because that's what that person needs, or they may need to speak to me about something. But I think when I step back and I go, okay, well, my pile is still there. Like, when I do that, you know, I'm pretty sure a lot of people, which rightfully so, do their projects first, and then they have free time. With me, I'll put you first, and then, okay, then I'm stressed out now because I know there's like a mountain of work waiting for me, and no one's gonna help me to do it because nobody can. So that's where I've had to, and as a caregiver, you just naturally do that. You naturally put that, your loved one first, and then you multitask around it.
I think you bring up a fantastic point. So your version of solitude is a very constructive one where you, at the end of it, you're going to feel accomplished with yourself. You're going to feel very happy with the work that you've accomplished, and like, it allows you to move forward in a very healthy manner, where the solitude that I face is much deeper, darker. It's no motivation to do anything, and everything drowns out. So my version of being constructive would be to be like doing my active journaling, where I will try to have a conversation with myself, so to speak, about insecurities and stuff like that, and that way I can take what would be a very kind of boring, lethargic downtime that's gonna allow me to kind of spiral into a negative state of mind, and I can flip it and I can work on some issues that I need to work on. And I find it interesting because for me, like, I need to engage in conversation for those issues to become prevalent. So I don't realize they're there until I've talked about them, and they come up spontaneously through conversation. So something might trigger it, and I'll be like, oh wow, I didn't realize that was an issue. Okay, well, like, let's put that on the side for now, and when I have some alone time, like, we can dive into this and we can experiment and we can kind of see, why does this bother me? How does it bother me? Can I learn to recognize that it's going to bother me and kind of pull it back a little bit and kind of work on stuff that way? Because I do not do quiet time well. Don't get me wrong, I love laying on the couch, hanging out, but I need to be constructive because after like a day of being lazy, I start to eat myself alive.
Well, I think that's the important part. And I'm not saying that it was always easy. Like, that solitude, I think there's a difference. there's a difference between solitude and isolation.
Yeah.
And I was isolated in my darkest times. So, yeah, that was just, like, I didn't have any motivation to do anything. I just wanted to sleep and not be with the world. But when my recharge is solitude, because it just means solo. Just like how solitaire, like it's just a one-man show.
I like that.
And I need that so that I can just be like, okay, I got this done. And then now as you said, it improves my mood. I don't feel overwhelmed. I have a handle of what I'm doing. And I feel extremely more organized rather than flying off the seat of my pants, which is what caregiving is.
Yeah, you're just reacting to situations.
I can be proactive. I'm like, okay, well, I know this is done. I just really have to fine-tune this. Or I got this done today. I feel really accomplished today. And, that's what I need to, I guess, move forward for my mental health.
I think we've talked about this before, where a lot of people have a to-do list throughout the day.
Yeah.
Everybody knows what the to-do list is. Yeah. It's frustrating. It's daunting.
Because mine was like a conveyor belt.
Yeah. It's never ending. Yeah. Right? It's never ending. Just everything gets added on. You never catch up on it. Whereas a really healthy state of mind would be to sit down at the end of the day and really list out all the things that you've accomplished. Because I think a lot of people don't give themselves enough credit on what they've actually done throughout a day.
And to have us, I think another piggybacking on that is to understand and know you're never going to get everything done. Never, ever, ever. It's not possible. So having that unrealistic expectation is probably what's adding to your stress and being overwhelmed and anxiety. Is that you're striving for, as you saw me, like, cleaning the floor and you're laughing. I'm like, oh, that's bothering me. But, that's OCD. So I can't help that.
I think that's a really nice little segue, actually, into realistic expectations. And that is not just with yourself. I think that's with people in your life as well. So if somebody in your life shows you consistently a specific type of behavior, you cannot expect otherwise. Like, you cannot expect them to go above and beyond when they've never actually shown you that they're capable of that. So that's one thing that I've kind of learned, is to be able to look at a situation with a realistic expectation on what somebody is able to either help me with, or have, communicate to me effectively, or even a realistic expectation of how I'm going to handle a situation. So if I can look at it and look and go, this is probably going to trigger me, and, there's a potential that I might get very angry, I might get very sad, I try to head that off before it happens.
And you can walk away, too.
Yeah, you can walk away. I choose, personally, in my new relationship, I have been tending to kind of come right out with it and be like, hey, listen, this is potentially going to get to a point where I'm going to be heavily triggered. These are potentially the reasons why. I'd like to talk this through now before we get to a point where, like, nothing's going to make sense anymore because I'm just going to snap. So instead of getting to a point of being, like, angry, upset, emotionally hurt, whatever it may be, I try to kind of head that off, have that conversation as a mature adult where we can talk about things in a very safe environment versus, like, just reacting to a situation once it gets to a point that you can no longer ignore it. And I've had a lot of success with that, so.
I think that's a good point, too, of, I tend to do that, too, where I will, if somebody, let's just say, has shown kindness in the past, that's the image that I'm going to have of that person, even though they can be, like, doing a whole bunch of things after that. I just hold that one act.
It's like setting precedent.
Yeah, but then I just think, I'm seeing the person how I want to see them, not how they are. So, it takes, my mom used to have this saying as, I'll give you a long rope because eventually you'll hang yourself with it. And it's just been embedded in my mind because I guess, but it's trying to assess, well, not everyone deserves that long rope. Like, yeah, I guess my son deserves a long rope. And he's never going to hang himself. I'm sure he knows. He's like, yeah, she's all talk. But yeah, he's never going to hang himself. Like, he gets gets the major pass.
Yeah.
But people in your life, they deserve, like, yeah, you need, there has to be, like, you're, you know, crossing boundaries, left, right, and center. I've addressed this with you, and you keep doing it. So at what point, like, I'm trying to teach you how to treat me, and you refuse to learn. So, you know, unfortunately, in those situations, like, I, you know, it gets very mentally draining. So, you know.
Oh, I agree completely.
Then it's just, okay, well, I've tried.
I think that goes a long way for, like, personal growth, is when you're actually able to step back from the situation and know your own self-worth.
Yeah.
So when you know what you, like, how you value yourself and how you see yourself is in a much healthier, loving way, your ability to put up with toxic situations significantly diminishes. Like, you can't have it in your life anymore. Once you get to a point where, like, I love myself, everything's great, you know, I'm still working on stuff. There's no doubt. Like, I think personal growth is a lifelong journey.
Yeah,
there's always stuff you can work on. There's always
it's
stuff
a
you can learn
document,
about yourself.
As I say.
Exactly. But you get to a certain level where, like, toxic relationships just become incredibly visible to you, and you just have to eliminate them.
Or I always, you know, like, they always say that same thing, hang around with 5 rich people, you'll be the 6th, hang around with 5 broke people, you'll be the 6th. It's, you sort of, we don't understand how important it is, the relationships that you are, and that goes with music, anything that you're feeding yourself, anything that you're around, if you're around, you know, like, so when even clients come to me and, you know, they're depressed, the first thing I say is stop watching the news. Maybe even put down social media.
Yeah.
Stop following people that you know, like, trigger you. Like, you're like, oh my God, you know, just stop following them. You don't have to follow them. And as we were saying, that, you know, social media and any media, anything on the web is based on an algorithm. So if you're gonna start following positive messages and positive influences, that's gonna flood your social media experience. So every time you log on, you're gonna see some, I guess, positive quote or anything to do with uplifting. And if you're just consumed with negative, like, I always say, it's so easy to be depressed and angry. It's so easy. Like, that requires no work.
Yeah.
If I'm upset, I can find, I just have to put one thing on my post, and guaranteed it's going to be flooded with comments.
I think this is coming from somewhere, like, I have a very, very small social media person.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really do very much social media. It's just never really been my thing. But that being said, I think if you are going through something and you're really trying to make yourself better and you're really trying to work through yourself, I'm not saying give up social media altogether. I'm not saying...
I take breaks.
But seriously, regulate what you're doing. So, you know, maybe allow yourself half an hour a day to do what you want to do on it. That extra amount of time, because for most people, it's a vast amount of time. Put that into something a lot more constructive. I mean, you could meditate. You could try to clear your mind. You could, you know, it helps in a lot of ways. It helped me tremendously to be able to organize thoughts and not get overwhelmed when my anxiety started to spike, and to be able to control my breathing and drop my heart rate down and all that kind of stuff.
How did you find the VR?
The VR was really interesting.
Oh, that's virtual reality.
Yeah, so the VR meditation was like a guided session we did. I personally get a really massive reboot, you know, spiritually or whatever you want to say, if I'm in nature.
Yeah.
So if I go for a really nice hike, maybe on the Bruce Trail or whatever trail systems are around you guys, for me, it's a great literal breath of fresh air. I get rejuvenated. I feel phenomenal after. That's really good. So the VR session was like a meditation session while I was walking through the woods in the comfort of the living room. It was really interesting.
Yeah, I think that would be great, especially as the weather changes.
For winter, it'd
yeah,
be phenomenal.
It would,
yeah,
I'm sure it's
going to
help a lot of people.
Yeah, I think it'd be really good. Meditation, like I said, is phenomenal for a lot of aspects of mental health. The other one that I found that was really successful for me was journaling. And, like, we've touched base on, like, my history. Like, I come from a very, you know, manly man background. I work a pretty intense trade. So like the idea of me journaling, I was just like, I got nothing to say. What's there to say? I can't say anything.
And everyone says that.
Yeah, like I can't think
of. You'll be surprised.
I can't think of how to write a page every night on how my day went.
And we can talk about that. Journaling is unique to yourself. Like,
oh,
you could do bullet points.
Yep.
You could be drawing in there. Like, it's really a personal experience.
For me, it was honestly the ramblings of a crazy man. So, like, I took a lot of incredibly negative thoughts that were in my mind, and I wrote them out. And for me, I was actively trying to take those thoughts from my brain, shove them on the piece of paper, and that was it. Just get them out.
Yeah, that's the best way.
And like I kind of used it to illuminate a lot of issues within myself and kind of write through them. And like once I started shining the flashlight on a lot of these insecurities, I realized that like, oh, you don't really have that much power. Like, you're only powerful from the shadows when I'm freaked out. But, like, if I shine the light over there, like, there's nothing. You're fine. I'm good.
It's cathartic.
Literally. And, yeah. Like, I went the next level, guys. Like, I would write out these really gnarly negative thoughts. And, like, I ripped the page out and I lit it on fire after.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, these thoughts are now gone. So, I mean, do that safely if you're going to do it, obviously. But, yeah, it was a really strange but empowering experience. And then I noticed after that my mind was significantly more clear and I was able to focus on a lot more positive things versus all the negativity that my own insecurities were bringing out. Like, you know, you're not good enough to do this, you'll never accomplish that. Like, just stuff that's ridiculous. You're your own ceiling. Yeah, you're your own ceiling, right? So once that stuff is slowly getting taken care of, like, it really opens up the world to just allow you to kind of find your flow and just kind of go with it.
Okay, so this is a great segue because we're going to end it here now. Literally 22 minutes. Perfect.
Yeah, perfect.
But I think it's a segue for our next topic, and it just came to me, is forgiveness and letting go and what that looks like, because I think a lot of people get stuck in that loop.
I think for me personally, not to take up too much more time, but for me personally, the word that really catapulted my personal growth journey was the word acceptance.
Yeah.
For me, that for some reason, that word I really gravitated to. And
it's ironic because in the five stages of grief, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, that's the final stage.
Yeah. So acceptance for me was huge, and it was accepting a lot. Yeah, we'll get
into
it.
So we did basically answer the question of who am I, and I think it's, we're a work in progress.
I would agree.
It's still loading. It's buffering.
Yeah.
Buffering. And we spoke about what we did to facilitate personal growth.
I mean, we're good.
Which is, like, again, a continuous process. You're always growing. Well, you should
always.
Be.
Yeah, I think so.
And not stuck in your comfort zone. Nothing grows in your comfort zone. So the operative word is growth and growing, right?
Yes, I would agree completely.
Okay, till we meet again.
See you later.
'Self.
Would you like to start or do you want me to take it?
No, you start.
I'll take it from here. My younger self. So depends how far back we go. I guess if we go to, like, let's go to high school for me.
Okay.
Because high school for me is where there is definitely some decisions that were made that led me to where I am today, I would say. So from a very young age, I knew that I wanted to pursue the career that I'm in now because I was surrounded, I think we touched base on this in another episode, but I was surrounded by a bunch of males in my family that all did this trade, and I thought it was just so cool and I wanted to be a part of that club. So I would definitely go back and be like, stay in school, or at least find something that you're passionate about. And I think that was a big mistake of mine, that I put so many eggs into one basket that I never really explored other avenues of employment that I was potentially could have been passionate about and could have really enjoyed more. And the older I get, the more I realize that, you know, money truly does not buy happiness. So if you're in a job that's very fulfilling, you love the people you work for, you love what you do, you can get up every day and you're, you know, actually enthusiastic about going to work, that's a massive plus in anybody's mental health. If you're struggling to get out of bed, you know, you're in a negative space, you're stressed out when you go to work, you know, these are all serious handicaps that could potentially push you over the edge in your personal life, in other areas. Like, you're going to come home a lot more stressed out, your relationships might be in trouble because of it. So I would definitely, number one, tell myself to find and pursue a career wholeheartedly that I was passionate about. And just kind of try to readjust my line of thinking about, you know, money and finances a little bit. And the idea that, you know, you don't necessarily need to make X amount of money to be successful. Like, you can have a great relationship, you can make however much money you make, just be happy. Like, that really goes a long way.
Funny that you said that, because I was telling you I created this workshop for, and it was called Later Life Choices for,
yes,
for people who found themselves out of work and they were in their career for like 20-25 years. So the same type of thing,
mm-hmm,
where you're just directed on a path, you like whether it's your parents had these expectations of you and you just went on that path without even thinking of what do I really want to be when I grow up. And it's so funny because when we're in kindergarten, that's what they kind of ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up? And nobody ever goes back to what was your initial thought, okay, other than superhero. I'm sure there were like some good career choices.
Because
you do get some kind of, I want to be a ninja.
I mean, I don't blame you. That'd be pretty cool.
But yeah, well, if you want to be a ninja, let's find the best ninja teacher. And you could be that ninja.
Yeah, I mean,
knows
you might be a jiu-jitsu instructor,
exactly,
or something, right?
Let's just, but it's funny, we kind of, we don't actually entertain these childhood dreams unless you're like my brother who at 8 knew he was going to be a lawyer. And he's a lawyer.
Yeah, kudos to him, because that's few and far between.
Yeah, like, he just knew. And
yeah.
And I said, well, obviously, because you like to argue.
My roommate is a teacher. He's a high school teacher. And he's, because of COVID, I've been privileged enough to be in the house while he's doing online classes.
Yeah.
And
he's
exceptional. He is, like, if he was one of my professors in high school, like,
yeah,
my life could have been very different with his guidance.
But that's the other, that's a good, a lot of teachers are just in it for the perks of teaching.
He is, yeah, he's exceptional. It's something he's very passionate about. And I asked him one day, because I was like, man, like, you're really good at this. Like, you're doing what you were meant
right
to do, 100%. I'm like, how did you know? And this is coming from somebody that's in the midst of looking for different career options and just trying to find something that I'm passionate about. And he told me when he was in high school, he coached a young rugby team. And he said, literally, he's like, man, he's like, I got to mentor them and I got to watch them grow and I got to teach them. And he's like, I decided right there and then I was going to be a teacher. And he's like, and I never looked back. And he pursued that dream wholeheartedly and he went after it. And like, he's doing great. And he's happy at work. Like, he thoroughly enjoys his job 85% of the time. I'm sure there's some days, but for the most part,
but
he's
everybody, right, has days. And I just, so, you know, in developing that workshop, obviously you have to do research, and I came across, I'm going to actually fine tune that, because I keep talking about it, so I have to do it. I'm going to fine tune it and put it online so that people can just pay for it, like, very nominal. And I think, and everybody should, and I'm not just saying that, I think there's value in it only because there's questions that you wouldn't think of answering for yourself. And there was one motivational video that I use, and the speaker made a such a great point. He said, when we're in school and your kid brings home, or you could put yourself in it if you don't have a kid, but you bring home a report card, and your parents bypass all your good marks and focus on the F or the D or whatever. And it's like, and then you spend all your time trying to pull up that mark, but you're not focused on the A's.
Yeah, the natural talent,
right,
and the natural
so,
gift.
And he said, so we have everything backwards. Like, why do we always focus on the thing that your kid isn't maybe excelling at and not thinking, wow, you got an A in math, so clearly that's your strength. Why do we try to, like, develop your weakness when it's your talent clearly isn't in your weakness?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can make the same argument with professional athletes, right? So
right.
There's certain sports out there that, like, genetically you are gifted. Skill in training can only really get you so far, not in all sports, but definitely in a few. And some people are just genetically gifted to excel, and they figured it out at a very young age and they put the work in. I think it's the same thing with school systems. I think if you were to focus on something that you excelled at, the likelihood of you finding a job that you're passionate about later on in life is significantly higher. You're gonna be in a field that you enjoy, that you understand, that you looked forward to getting to. I find it very interesting because, you know, I was not a good high school student. I was horrible. Like, I...
But, okay, I was gonna touch on that because I was gonna talk about my son. So, you know, people are just like, oh, he's just, you know, he's a genius, he's a brain, he's this. And it's like, was he? Or was it just the coaching?
Yeah.
Because from a young age, obviously you do all the stuff because, you know, we know more now. So from 0 to 6, you're a sponge. So you can literally learn another language from 0 to 6. So I started right from the get-go because I knew this. And it's all training, right? Like, it's all, well, I'm going to expose him to as much information possible as I can. So I spoke to him like an adult. I never had that baby talk. And we had flashcards, workbooks. Like, we were always learning. But when he got older, and then he would bring home, like, whatever, even if it was a B, I was always like, well, was that the best you could do? Because I go, if it's the best you can do, I'm very happy about your mark. But he would be honest and say no.
Yep.
So that there lies the push, because I'm not pushing him to do more than he can do, but I'm challenging him to be like, well, was it the best?
Yeah, if you can get to a point where you can actually recognize your potential in something, right? So I think that's a massive undertaking, is for somebody to get to a point where they're really recognizing the potential. And that's where you get in some really interesting career choices, some really interesting life paths. And,
well,
like, I feel like that potentially could be led to passion. Like, my biggest issue is in high school, like, I chalked up to the fact that, like, I just need to do 4 years, get out. I know what I'm going to do.
Knew.
I had a built-in idea
yeah.
of what I wanted to do. And I was like, I just want to get in, get out, and that's it.
Right.
And, like,
you
if
just
I could go
put
back.
My time in.
Exactly.
It's a prison
and, like,
sentence.
It's interesting because, like, my grades were all over the place, and very little of it had to do with anything other than who was teaching me. So I had specific teachers that I found incredibly captivating and engaging, and I was, you know, I was getting A's, easily getting A's.
There you go.
I had teachers that I didn't respond well to, and, like, I would literally pass their class with a 51 because I knew how to do the bare minimum
to get
by. And I never failed any classes. Because, like, I knew I wanted out in 4 years. So, like, I did enough work. But it was one of those things where I'd already kind of pre-established what I wanted to do within a very limited construction of what I knew was out there. So, like, I was like, oh, I want to do this because it's cool. Everybody I know does it. I'm going to be one of the boys. It's going to be great. But if I would have stepped back and actually took those years and actively tried to hone some skills and to really work on something that came naturally to me, or, you know, whatever it may be, and find something that I was sincerely passionate about, I'd be in a very different place than I am right now.
Yep.
Potentially. I mean, potentially I could end up in the exact same spot. I have no idea. But it would definitely be something worth pursuing.
Well, I think that's what was lacking. So I have a close family friend. She's more like family. So she was telling me about her son who is 10, and you know, he was given a math question, and because of what he knows naturally, it was basically a question, I guess, relating to credit. So like, it was saying this person had so much money, but she, you know, she bought this, how much, whatever. And he was like, his answer was, she shouldn't go up, she shouldn't shop outside of her means. That was his answer. And I'm like, that is an amazing answer.
That is
a
very good answer.
But it initiated a call home to, like, basically, like, he's not getting the work and whatever. And I said, instead of thinking, like, instead of fine-tuning the question for his logical mind to understand, because basically he's clearly analytical, and his logic mind, it's not breaking his logical mind. Like, she doesn't have the money, so
yes.
She can't, she should shop within her means. And that's logical. And that's actually the best kind of education to get at that young age. Instead of saying, okay, let's just put it in a different context, or let's figure out how he learns. But this is, so we're still doing it, is basically, we're still teaching not based on logic. But then by the time you get, so this is what's weird, because by the time you get to university, you have to be analytical.
Yes.
But we're not teaching that.
I think from somebody that went through high school like 10 years ago, I'm 28 now, so like I graduated 10 years ago. There's a lot of stuff that I learned as a young adult that was never taught to me while I was in school. And you can make the argument that it's your parents' responsibility or whoever's responsibility. I don't know. But for one, number one, finances.
Well, how can even your parents teach? Well, yeah, your parents can teach you some.
They're going to teach you
the
what
core,
they know.
Yeah, the
potentially.
Core of finances.
Yeah.
However, even banking, like
banking
has changed so much from when they were
like,
banking to now, and like the interest and the fees.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know.
I would like a high school student to be able to give me a breakdown on mortgages.
They wouldn't be able to.
No, they wouldn't be able to. Or
I know
accurately describe what an RSP is. You know what I mean? Something along those lines where it's like, hey, let's take these young adults and set them up financially. We can set them up with general information that is actually going to help them move forward in life. Once we get into post-secondary, like college, university, okay, now let's specialize into some really intense maths and some stuff like that. But I think high school is the building blocks, and there's such a diverse community while you're in high school. You have people that are going to go straight into the trades. You have people that are going to go to college, university. You have people that might do nothing at all. It would be really interesting, in my opinion, if we could set up at least a couple courses that would allow for some immediate success the moment you step in to adulthood.
What I find is lacking also, too, is life skills.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, I guess that would probably come under.
I was literally, you should be teaching, like, some level of counseling or some level
of coping
mechanisms. Yeah, because,
like, I find
mechanisms.
It's the, what happens is when you have this, I think that's the problem, that the crux of the issue is that we teach kids, this is your path, but we don't. Like, it's like the game of life. I think, that's why that workshop is called Life Choices, because it was based off of that game. That game is such a great game, and it should actually be part a course. Like, you
yeah,
should
literally.
Have to play the game of life,
yeah.
Because anything can happen. And I think that's what isn't taught, that you could have this, okay, I'm going to do this, this, and this, but then, okay, a parent gets sick, or a parent passes, or divorce.
What?
Or
let's take something that's absolutely guaranteed to happen right before you graduate high school, and that is the unbelievable pressure of you are 17, 18 years old, and you need to potentially, everybody in your life is telling you to make a decision right now that's going to arguably affect you for the rest of your life. These kids have absolutely...
At 18.
At 18.
No. It's actually...
Well, younger,
when
realistically.
Nine. When you,
yeah.
you have to... Because, like, that's what... We had to pick that path
yep.
in great from the time you even go into elementary school.
So, you can't... So, arguably, these kids can't drive, yet they're picking a career path. Unless there's any family involvement, they have absolutely no real mental health coping skills. They don't have... they don't know how to manage stress appropriately. They don't know any of these things.
Well, it's all
they just get fed to the wolves.
Yeah, it's all these, like you said, you're coming from different demographics too. Like it you know, you might have started with, for lack of a better word, a handicap. So
right.
like you know, maybe your parents are divorced now. Like there might be different circumstances that. You know, you didn't start off like this, but then, and then they can't cope. Like, now you can't cope because there's a breakdown of something.
I mean, even if we looked into, like, something along the lines of bullying.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, why do kids bully?
Yeah.
So, if we had some form of classes that were being taught, and I mean, I say this, and, like, I'm sure if I was in high school and they were teaching me about
so
mental health.
So, anger management, I guess.
Anger management,
conflict
or
resolution.
I mean, what's triggering these kids? What's causing these kids to
anxiety.
Lash out? Anxiety. Is there something potentially going on at home that's, you know, they're taking aggression out at school?
Even social skills, because it's completely different now. Everyone's on their phone.
Yes. Well, that's the thing is everybody's learning how to code. Everybody's learning how to, you know.
No one's communicating.
Yeah. So like we're the most connected society in the history of the world. Yet we're the most
disconnected
socially.
Yeah.
So these are a lot of things that, you know, if you're 19, 20 years old, or let's say 22, whatever, you're out of school, you're walking in for your first job interview, and whoever's hiring you, the HR rep, goes to shake your hand and you can't look them in the eye because your anxiety is so bad or you don't have that kind of trust in yourself or whatever it may be, like that's an issue. Like you should be taught at a young age how to be confident, how to deal with stress, how to deal with anxiety, how to make them work for you, but we're not. Like mental health, everybody's very inclusive about mental health these days.
I know they, well, I think it's a hashtag.
Yeah, it's literally, it's a hashtag. So
it's like a buzzword.
Everybody's like, oh yeah, like we support your mental health, but it's like, okay, well, like why are we not providing
tools.
Some form of at least foundation work at a younger age that allows kids, you know, if you're in grade 3, take an hour out of their half an hour of the day and let's have these kids meditate for half an hour. I'm just curious.
I think they're starting to implement mindfulness.
That's great. I love it.
But I know it's like, well, obviously in Japan, I think it's like,
yeah,
it's a big deal.
Japan, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
But you look at it, and I believe in their school system, kids are dealing with stress a lot better. Their test results go up. Like, imagine if you are a kid that was taught to meditate and to control your emotions, control your thoughts.
I just think they need to teach emotional intelligence.
That's it.
But I think adults need that, too.
I think, well, you can't learn something that was never taught.
I don't think people even know what that is.
No, I don't think so either. But it's... Yeah, I feel like if you are able, and this is from somebody that just kind of started meditating, but if you take meditation and you get to a certain place with it, you're able to apply the fundamentals of that anywhere in life.
I think because, okay, for me especially, I could never, we spoke about this, I could never quiet my mind. My mind
mm-hmm.
was constantly, and I think in my defense, coming from a caregiving situation when you're dealing with something like dementia or Alzheimer's in particular. And for the record, because I get asked this forever, dementia is just the umbrella term. So like dementia is like the cancer term. And you know how they have different types of cancer? Well, they have different types of dementia. And Alzheimer's is the most prevalent one. So when people say, well, what's the difference? There really isn't. Dementia is like a cognitive decline.
Yes.
It's just the umbrella term for cognitive decline. And then Alzheimer's is the most prevalent. So people think it's different, but it's not. It's just a form of dementia. And when you're dealing with something like that, you have to be always thinking of the next. Like you,
oh, yeah,
I never
I would
got,
imagine.
I can, there was never a, well, there was stages where it would plateau. So you get used to that, but then within that stage,
that's,
it's up
that's
and down, up and down, up and down, up and down.
That's human nature. Everybody, you put anybody in a situation and eventually they'll learn how to adapt.
Right.
The problem is you're learning how to adapt into an extreme.
Into chaos.
Into chaos.
That's what it is. Organized chaos.
It's incredibly difficult to pull yourself out of that,
right,
because you've been conditioned to be that way.
So it's good because, of course, skill-wise, I can be, like, nothing will faze me. Like,
oh, yeah.
I can
you
be
can
in
roll
the most,
with the punches like no
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I could be in the, like, this, like, pandemic when people are like, oh, my God. Yeah, okay, well, this was just my life for 20 years, so
yeah,
it's just more of the same. Isolation, right, and just coping without, I guess, a stress factor. So I'm like chilling.
Yeah.
But also, I could not meditate. But now, of course, I can quiet my mind, and it's and I think meditation to some people, even for myself, it's like a that in itself gives me anxiety because now I'm like, oh my God, I can't even do that. But it's really just focusing. It's really,
yeah,
it is just hyper-focusing.
Well, like, I had a really hard time with it at the start because, like, you, okay, so you sit there, you're excited.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, I'm going to
do
this.
I'm gonna
really
do
this. And the next thing you know, like, you hear the dog in the next room. Now you're thinking about the dog.
Yep.
Okay,
what's
so, and
the
then
dog?
Your thought process just consistently spirals, right? So what I learned to do was to be able to acknowledge the fact that, okay, that thought has now entered my mind. Okay, acknowledge that it's there, push it to the side. We're going to go
important.
Right back to where we
yeah,
were before.
It's not important.
So if you're able to slowly learn those skills, and I'm no master by any means, but I've been able to incorporate that into my daily life. If I'm into an incredibly anxiety-inducing situation, I'm significantly better at being able to catalog those thoughts and push them aside because I know how to do it versus allowing those negative thoughts to run rampant in my mind. I'm able to now go, okay, that's not a good thought. I acknowledge that you're there. I accept your presence. You're now gone.
And you have to, I think it, well, we talk about this all the time, but I mean, it's, how is that thought making you feel? So you have to think about it. Is that thought a good thought? Well, clearly no. Majority of your thoughts are not good thoughts.
No, absolutely.
So then why even, then you have to think, it's not a real thought. It's not real. It's not really, it's just a thought. So I don't want, it's acknowledging that, yeah, that's a thought. I don't need that thought right now. It's not making me feel good. So let me just, I don't need to live there.
I think that's a great way to wrap this up. So advice for my younger self. If it's not a positive thought or leading to a positive outcome, it doesn't need to be there. That can go for friendships, relationships.
I was just going to talk about that. I think we need to
jobs.
Segue into, because it's your younger self, definitely your friendships. So
yes.
I told you, my mom used to always say when I was younger, but you know, your parents say a lot of things and you're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But she was so right. Show me your company, know who you are.
Oh yeah, you can take anybody, surround them. So like if you have 5 drug addicts,
yep, you're going to be
the 6th.
You're
going to be
the 6th.
If
for
you
sure.
have 5 millionaires,
You're
going to
be
the
6th. And where do you want to be then? Where do you want to be? Like, I know where I want to be. So I want to be around positive, uplifting people because I want to be a positive, uplifting person.
And then as soon as you're around those people, you know, your frequency or your energy is going to rise to the point where, like,
well, I
that's all you
them.
Attract.
Yeah, I want to be around
yeah,
that.
And that's what you're going to attract into your life.
It's just, I find, and that's why, like, you can't, and it, you know, a lot of people get hung up, well, but there's this quality and that, you can't, it's all, it's, you can't a la carte it.
Yeah.
You can't, when you're on that path, you can't be like, well, this is good. Because, no, if you're around it, that's what you're going to be. It's the same thing they talk about, the stuff you listen to, the social media you follow, the news, like everything, you have to make sure you're like, okay, garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah, you need to be able to filter a lot of the crap that you're going
to
see.
You have to be like McAfee.
Yeah, literally.
Like you have to, a firewall.
So if it's not a positive thought, intention, whatever, that's going to serve you in the long run, then like, gone.
I have another good friend, very, very close friend. He's like family too. And he says it all the time. He goes, I wish I didn't hang around the people that I hung around with in high school. I should have hung around, because he's realizing,
yep,
like how further along he would be. Because, you know, we're fortunate now. We can see where people are and where they landed. And he said, because I wish I didn't hang around those people because I was the sixth or whatever.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And so that's what I would tell my, well, I never really had a problem with that. But I mean, I would be like, I honestly don't think I could have told my younger, that's the sad part of this.
I'm saying this like so optimistically because like the 16-year-old version of me would be like, yeah, bite it, man. Go away.
Because I'm trying to think even in perspective of the things that happened in my life that were out of my control. I would have probably told myself, but I'm still even thinking, like, anyways, the only thing I would have told myself is, what I tell my son, is get all your education continuously. Because now at 51, finishing my doctorate, it's daunting, it's a lot of work, and you're balancing, like, working and...
There's two ways to look at it, though.
Yeah,
like, you
exactly.
Could, like, this is the beautiful thing about this, is, like, you can look at it as, if you could give advice, if you had a time machine, you could go back, you could give advice to your younger self. That's a really cool notion. And it could potentially lead you down a better path. The issue is you would not be the same person you are today, and you would learn very different lessons. So there's the argument to be, like, are you here because you're supposed to be here learning these lessons now? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like I honestly think with my dad dying at 31, and then my mom was already diagnosed. I don't think I could have told myself anything different, because those were two very big things that happened to me in my life.
That's
And oh yeah, my fiance died at 28. So yeah, there was like big life-changing things that I could not have anticipated. So I don't think in my scenario, I really don't think I could have given my advice.
On the path you're kind of supposed to be on, I guess.
Yeah, and as much as I think, oh my God, at 51, like it's proven, scientifically proven, to stare off dementia is getting higher education in your later life.
I fully believe that. I mean,
so I think that it's
you're working out your brain.
Yeah, I'm overloading my brain to starve off dementia. So I think it's supposed to happen this way.
I like it.
So for me, not so much I could have told myself.
Yeah, I like to really think that there's some stuff I could really wholeheartedly tell myself, but I wouldn't have listened.
And I was really happy-go-lucky anyways. Like, I was very much that comedian. Like, my friends used to say, you should do stand-up. I'm like, no. Because I'm shy, but my banter comes from communicating. So I wouldn't be good.
Yeah, same as me.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to stand up and
I'm not
just
good at improv.
Say jokes.
I'm good at reacting.
It's just like I'm very sarcastic, so like it will just come off. So yeah, no, that wouldn't have worked. But I mean, I was going to go back to the meditation, because I'm sure everybody has done this. It's like daydreaming. It's really just letting your mind wander. Because you know, when you're younger, you daydreamed all the time. And people would frown upon that, but that's really the best thing to do, because you're really just in the now. Like, you're just daydreaming, like, da-da-da. Oh, yeah, that would be good. Like, you're visualizing while you're daydreaming.
Yeah, it's a really helpful, it's just a peaceful way to kind of drop blood pressure, drop whatever you want, get everything collected. It's something that I wish I started really pursuing at a lot younger of an age.
But do you think that maybe you were doing it and just didn't, it wasn't called something? Like, I know when I go outside, because we were talking about that.
Yeah.
When you go outside, you're completely hyper-focused on
Absolutely.
What you're doing.
Yep.
So you're noticing the birds, the leaves, the air, whatever.
Before I really started pursuing meditation, right after my ex and I split up, I was really depressed. And I was spending a ridiculous amount of time outdoors. I was going on 10, 15 kilometer hikes. And like, to me, that was rejuvenating. It was clean, fresh air. And honestly, it was meditation to a certain extent. Because I was out there by myself with my dog, just enjoying life, just going for a walk, clear head, and just enjoying the moment. And it was able to get me out of the stresses of my daily life. And I think that's a big, big part about it. Like, it doesn't have to be meditation. It doesn't have to be anything.
Yeah, this
I think
has
people
to be
just,
called something.
Yeah.
I think that people get hung up in,
yeah.
I got to do this. Because then that's another to-do.
And
then
like,
when you're not good at it, now you're like, oh my God, I'm not good at that.
That's the interesting thing is like, don't even, like, if you're not good at it, it doesn't matter. Because you're still, even if you have a really hard time sitting still and really letting go of everything, you're still actively learning. You're still actively trying. Like, it's better than doing nothing, right?
Well,
like, you're going to get better.
I had a problem. This is how bad it was when my mom was alive. I couldn't even watch a show without pausing it, doing something else, like, and now I can actually binge watch things and actually focus on
yeah.
it. And that's even being able to meditate. If you are able to watch something and really, you could like have a conversation about it after, you have quieted your mind on one thing.
Yeah, you're solely focused.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's really what meditation is. It's quieting your mind
yeah.
and focusing.
I mean, you can meditate, you can grab a book.
Even write a right.
Yeah,
I
grab
was just
a book.
Say read a book.
Read. It doesn't matter. Whatever you do to get yourself out of the stresses of your life into a moment in time that you can appreciate yourself, relax, and is healthy for you in the long run.
I think that's why I enjoy like putting presentations together. Because I'm hyper-focused.
You're hyper-focused. You probably hit a flow state as
yeah.
well. You're probably
you're
incredibly
like,
productive.
Yeah, and then I...
Without even thinking.
And I'm like, oh my God, I'm really enjoying this,
yeah.
and this has to go here, and this, like, I think... And that's my form of meditating.
My ex-girlfriend used to have a daily planner, and, like, if she was stressed out, like, she organized, color-coded, like, that was her way of...
Well, that's why with people, when they purge or declutter
yeah.
or organize,
yeah.
like, that's their way.
I think life is so chaotic and busy these days that people just need to take the time to step back and really have some me time. And, like, whatever it may be, if it's planning or a presentation or meditating, reading, whatever.
Well, I think,
just take the time for
I
yourself.
Because even this pandemic, people have said that they've slowed down, but... I think the other part is people are comparing and contrasting. So, like, you know, of course, my pandemic isn't the same as your pandemic.
Mm.
So, for me, it would be different. Remember, I've trained. This is a marathon. I've trained for this.
Yeah.
I've literally trained
yeah,
for this.
Yeah, you're getting
pandemic.
Olympic gold.
I'm getting the gold medal for being able to get through this without, like, it doesn't affect me. But it's 20 years in. So
yes.
Don't compare yourself. So where I've like, I literally wrote a book. Like, I've done so many things during this pandemic that I probably wouldn't have been able to do. But you can't compare yourself to me or to someone else. Like, they might have done this or they've. And so if you just got through it, that's good for you.
Yeah, you made it through.
Yeah, you made it through. So like, I think that's the other thing people are, well, I didn't do this. Because, you know, I see some memes. If you didn't do this, if you didn't start a business, like, come on. That's unrealistic. Maybe for some people. But I also didn't in my defense too, I didn't have, I just had a university student online learning for the first time, right? You know, some people had like little kids.
I
don't think I
could have
got through that.
A very close friend of mine has 4 kids.
Yeah, no.
Under the age of 9, all doing online classes while she works full time from home.
Yeah, see, like
that
to me is like, I don't think I could have done
that's
that.
Crazy.
Right.
Like, there has never been a time that a parent has been asked to be
a teacher,
a full time employee.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. It's
right.
Absolutely crazy.
So,
and like, she made it through. Like, good job. I'm so sorry that you didn't get a chance to start a business, but like, you
right.
survived.
Thank you.
Like,
that's what I'm saying. So, like, I just want people to think, like, stop. You don't need to compare. This is another part of anxiety, of comparing yourself. And this is what social media does.
Yeah, this is
right?
Social media to a T.
They put unrealistic expectations out there, and then you start, you know, oh my God, I'm not even anywhere close. And then you don't compare, you compare yourself to you. It's you against you.
Yep.
That's all, you know, you just have to be better than yourself.
Yeah, so that's something that we talked about in depth, actually, when I started therapy, and that I really held on to for a long time.
Yeah, you against you.
I compared myself to who I was in the past and felt like I had lost sight of that. And I compared myself to who I expected to be at this age. And I fell short of that to a certain degree within, you know, those delusional kind of state of mind. Like, I fell short of my goals and aspirations. There's a lot of stuff that happened that I didn't see coming.
Well,
I made it through.
That's part of the presentation I did is, you know, I picked people that are successful, but much later, like Colonel Sanders. Like, there's a whole bunch of people that didn't gain success till they were much older. So there's no timeline,
I'm
saying.
The big one for me was, you know, don't compare yourself to anybody except for who you were yesterday.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, the goal is to be a little bit better than you were yesterday. You know, if you're a heavy smoker and you cut down on a couple smokes in a day, because most heavy smokers are relatively consistent on how much they smoke, for example. So if you cut down a little bit, like, good for you, man. That's an accomplishment. You're a little bit better than you were yesterday. If, you know, you run 5K a day and you ran 6, you're a little bit better, whatever,
like,
it may be.
You're hard on yourself. Like, okay, like, today, you know, I had a sinus headache, so I didn't get as much as I wanted to, but I did a lot yesterday. So, like, it's just...
Yeah, so the big thing for me was I didn't necessarily compare it for stuff like that too much. I did it with, like, my mental health and my outlook on the world. So I did it a lot with, like, you know, yesterday I had a really down day.
Mm-hmm.
Today I'm going to try to, like, pick myself up a little bit, dust myself off, and not jump down the rabbit hole.
That's right.
And, like, you just get better at it. And eventually you can see the rabbit hole from a mile away. You pull into the other lane, you miss it completely, and you just keep going.
Yeah, I think that's the key. Just
day by day.
Navigating your day, and it doesn't have to be perfect every time, and you're never
going
to get it right. It's never going to get done. I always tell myself, because I'm an overachiever, so, and I have a type A personality, so I have to be like...
Yeah, that's a scary combination.
Right. So I always have to tell myself, it's never going to get done. So you're going to drive yourself. There's no perfection.
Oh yeah, you're your own worst enemy at that point.
Right, so like, it's never gonna get done. You're always gonna have something to do. So if you are unrealistic about that, you're setting yourself up for failure. Stop it, Coco.
Yeah, so unrealistic expectations. I mean, that is the downfall for a lot of people, I think. That's a downfall for a lot of relationships. It's a downfall for a lot of mental health issues. Like, I think if people... we're able to step back and really analyze the situation and understand that, you know, the boyfriend that has broken up with you 3 or 4 times when you get back together, it's an unrealistic expectation to think the 5th time is going to be the one that works. If it does, like, buy a lottery ticket. Because realistically, it's probably going to repeat the cycle. So I think if you are able to have a realistic outlook on what is actually potentially going to happen, it will save you a lot of
trouble. Well, I
always
say that saying that admitting is the first step is true to point, and you have to be honest with yourself. So if you're not going to be honest with yourself, there's no point.
Well, and that's...
Because you're not going to fool yourself.
Yeah,
so.
It's a perfect 360 right back into therapy. So, like, if you're going to... Anybody that's actively thinking about doing therapy, like, if you're going to do therapy, you need to do it, and you need to do it all the way. You have to be 100% honest with yourself. It's going to be super uncomfortable. It's going to be difficult. But you have to do it. The interesting about therapy is you are going to walk into it with no answers because you don't even know what questions to ask. Once you get asked the right questions and you start kind of working through some stuff, that's when a lot of stuff's going to come up. At least, especially for me, like I'm a very verbal person.
Yeah.
So when I get asked something, that's when my brain's going to kickstart into being like, oh, like what? Oh, that's interesting. Why? I never thought of it like that. And that's when you're going to be able to start working through some stuff. But you have to be super honest with yourself. You have to be super comfortable with your therapist. You guys have to have a really good connection, I feel like. You have to kind of,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
You have to,
it's a team. It's
yeah.
a team, right?
Yeah.
So they're going to really help steer you in the right direction.
Well, it's the same
but,
thing.
But, like, you're
you
the one that has to go through and do all that serious, seriously deep work.
Well, same thing you said with teachers, right? You're going to get a good result if you have a good teacher.
Exactly.
And the ones that are not so good. And, you know, your therapist, it's not one size fits all. So, like, you're going to have to try a few on for size, if that's the case.
You guys might get along really well sitting in a circle playing drums.
Right.
It doesn't matter. Like, anybody, you know, you just have to find somebody you jive with.
Right.
That's the most important part.
And I was going to piggyback. You said something there. I was going to piggyback on it. But now I can't remember. So the thought has left my mind. That happens often. Okay. Well, I guess maybe that's a wrap then.
Yeah.
Because I can't think of the word.
I'm
trying,
like, what did I say? I don't know.
You were saying something, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a good point.
I think you just really need to be able to do the work and really, like, honest with yourself is the big one. Like, really honest with yourself. Because I think that's the hardest part is that when you're, like...
Oh, I was going to say, the work. It's work.
Yeah.
I think that's the operative word. Oh, that's what I was going to say. You keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you can't go to therapy for an hour once a week and be like, well, I did my hour today or this week. Like, I'm going to get great results.
And you're not changing anything.
No. That's literally, you're attempting to build the foundation to learn the skills to do the work on your own time. That's the way I see it.
Didn't they say that's the definition of insanity?
Yeah, repeating the same
thing over and over,
yeah,
and expecting a different result.
So if you're not really actively trying to do the work in your personal time, in your daily life, then you're not going to get the results you want.
It's like tap dancing.
Yeah.
She needs her nails cut. Oh my gosh, there's a bunny rabbit. Yeah, like, I think that's a lot of people. A lot of people go to therapy and they're the exact same person. They just think, oh yeah, well, I've done thousands of hours, but you're in the exact same situation.
Yeah.
You haven't changed anything.
You haven't actually done that, you know, shadow work or deep work, whatever you want to call it.
Because, like, what comes up, so what we don't talk about, and we could talk about it another thing, is we talk about childhood trauma.
Yeah.
And people, I think trauma is, like, something extremely traumatic. Yeah, for some people it is, but trauma isn't necessarily, it might not necessarily.
There could be, literally, you could have gone to hug a parent.
Correct.
And they did not reply with a hug,
right,
or respond with a hug, and, like, that could be traumatic enough to give you, you know, to have affected you into adulthood without even realizing it.
Because, you know, when you're working through it, like, my brother and I were latchkey kids, and people who don't know what latchkey is, it's literally exactly what it the word is. So the latchkey is like a key around your neck to open the door. And so, you know, my brother jokes about it because he goes, you know, if our parents were around, if we were kids, they would, CAS would be called, right? Because literally, he's 2 years older than me, and he was walking me home from school when he was 9, so I was 7, to make me lunch, lock back up, walk me back home, and tell our parents, you know, like, he was the responsible, he was my babysitter, basically, at 9. And you know, we say that now and we're like, oh, but we're okay, but are we okay? Are we, like, really, that's part of the nurturing as a parent. Like, of course, we know better now. Like, I would never, obviously, can't do that legally, but, you know, I wouldn't do that. But, you know, that is psychologically, that affects you. So my brother grew up constantly with that duty, right? That responsibility.
Oh, he would feel wholeheartedly responsible for your well-being.
Right. So, and it's funny because as we get older and, you know, I would have to remind him that, like his, my niece and myself, we're not the same age. Like, I'm not the daughter. But I think he can't get it out of his mind because that's how he viewed me. We were not equals. He was,
well,
like,
he was your protector.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Here's your guardian.
Right. So that, I'm trying to, like, trying to say that that could cause trauma later, because then now how do you view, like, that parental bond?
Yeah, these are all great questions.
Right. So I'm putting into perspective that trauma isn't necessarily, like, you know.
Yeah, everybody.
Physical trauma.
Everybody thinks it has to be,
like,
you know,
something dire.
Yeah, incredible. It could be, you know, something that was no big deal at the time, and it just festered, and it became a big deal. And subconsciously, you know it is, but, like, in reality, you're just been coping with it for years and never actually acknowledged it.
Well, because then it could portray into relationships. Like, we were just, you know, we touched on it off the podcast of being a people pleaser. And I was a people pleaser because it's that same... Well, when you're good, your parents, you know, you get all these things. You get, like, you know, when I got good grades, we went on a trip, or, like, they were, like, big gifts, like, right? Like, they were big gifts for doing major accomplishments. So you always wanted to be good. And then when you're not good, you know, they don't want you around. Then, you know, go to your room, get out of sight. Like, so your brain now is conditioned that, well, when I do things, when I give gifts, and when I, like, when I say yes, 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 even though I have nothing to give, and I'm just saying yes, 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 and being completely depleted.
Your brain is expecting a positive result.
Right, because then you're like, so then it transfers over, like, you're always giving. You're a giver, and then there's takers, right?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, the issue with that is there's very few people out there that would appreciate that wholeheartedly,
or then
without taking advantage.
Right, then there are people that just know.
Oh, well, yeah.
Karen's a giver, so.
Yeah, I can just ask, and, like, it's not a problem.
She's going to say yes.
No.
Or I'll wear her down. Even if she says no the first time,
yes,
I'll make her feel guilty, because
yeah,
that's another thing.
That was me.
I'm surprised my parents weren't Jewish, because, like, I grew up with this major guilt. Like,
yeah,
you know, if you say no, how dare you say no? Like, no, it's always yes, right? And it's like, you know, you have to learn. Like, so the part of therapy too is unlearning things that don't serve you.
Yeah, I like to refer to it as like a reboot or a rewire.
Reset.
Yeah, rewiring your brain to have
control,
healthier
alt, delete
pathways. Yeah.
Close tabs.
Pretty much.
Because, and it's, again, this is not, I want it on the record that, like, I'm not bashing my parents. Or
oh,
I don't
no,
have,
I'm sure you, yeah.
I don't have mommy or daddy issues. I just recognize in my adulthood that they were doing what they were taught.
Yep.
And that was best for them at the time. Now that we know better, you do better. That's just all it is. You know
that's,
better, you do better.
Yep, that's all.
And
it is.
We have literally an encyclopedia at our fingertips with Google. We didn't have that before, and now, like, we recognize how important mental health is. Back in the day, that was like, what? No, we don't talk about that. We don't talk about anything. We don't talk about emotions. Like, in my house, it's like, are you crying? Like, it was like,
oh yeah, yeah.
I'll give you something to cry about, and it's like, but you just did. So, like, are you gonna give me more of what you just did? But, like, obviously we recognize that's frowned upon now, and it's not healthy mentally. So, you know, it's just, it's unlearning a lot of things without the anger or the emotion.
Well, So I remember, like, I was, I think it was shortly after my ex and I broke up, and I was at work, and I was talking about a session that we had had, and my dad looked at me, and my dad is a man that I respect wholeheartedly, love the man, idolized the man for a very long, I still do in a lot of regards. He's my mentor at work, he's everything. And he looked at me, he said, "Your whole effing generation's in therapy." And I looked at him, and I started laughing. I said, "Yeah." I'm like, we're trying to end
the generational
cycles that you guys have passed on to us. And I'm like, and he's like, "Well, what do you mean? I wasn't a good dad." I'm like, "No." I'm like, "You did exactly how you were taught. And your dad did exactly how he was taught." So on and so forth. But somewhere down the line,
something needs to break.
Something needs to break, and something needs to be adjusted, and we need to, you know, my family has, you know, addiction issues.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why do we have addiction issues? Everybody.
What are you numbing?
Exactly. So, like, why is it? Is it because I've grew up seeing everybody smoke, so like I'm susceptible to it? I don't know what it is. So, like, now it's time. Okay, like, let's go in and deal with it. Let's go in and see. And work through issues.
And why? Like, the obvious, right? Why? The big why. The question is why? So, same type of thing. Like, I grew up watching my mom people please. Like, she was, like, a giver. Yes. And then, you know, a harsh reality hit where she became sick and there was crickets.
Yep.
Right? So, it's like, you don't even get to see, you don't get to learn the lesson, but I learned the lesson. So that's even better, right? So now...
Well, now you can teach the lesson.
Right. So now it's like, okay. And it's funny because my dad used to say it all the time. So he wasn't around to see what he used to always say. He used to always go, you know, when you're on top, everybody will be your friend. But let's see, you'll realize who your true friends are when you're not on top anymore.
Yep.
And he was completely right. So when she no longer could give, she was not required anymore.
Yeah.
So that's a very valuable lesson for me. And it's great. It was teachable to my son on, you know, make sure the people around you are the people around you.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's reciprocal.
You're looking for, people that... are gonna, if you are ever in a point in life where you need to establish boundaries for your own mental health, the people that you know are gonna be there for forever are the ones that are gonna accept that and respect it without hesitation.
There was something that I read where it goes, look at the people that don't clap when you win.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because there's a lot of people you think, like, you're rowing in your boat and they're drilling holes in it.
Literally.
And you're like, oh my God, I can't believe.
I think there's a lot to be said around, you know, who you surround yourself with.
But then that's why, it goes back to that. So that's why, like, you shouldn't be around those people, but you won't know.
That's the thing.
So you have to be hyper-vigilant of who's really around me when who can I call?
I think you just... like, for me personally, like, a lot of it is, like, open your eyes, pay attention, and trust your instincts. So, like, if your instincts are screaming, like, oh, this is a little shady, or, like, would this person not do this for me? You're probably right. Honestly, you're probably right. Your body, your mind, something's telling you something for a reason.
And it's not, I want to be clear. It's not even, I have friends that, like, I could call, and I know they'll be here, like, immediately. But there's also... some people that, like, you're a good person, but not for me.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, the stuff that you're doing or you're around, I can't jive with it. I don't want to be around people that I have to kind of, like, walk on eggshells. So, like, if I can't speak my mind because then you might get offended, even though I'm not trying to offend.
Yep, no.
I have to watch what I say. I don't want to be around that. That's too much work for me.
And that's where I am right now, too, is, like, I'm really starting to learn how to surround myself with people that, you know, respond well and enable personal growth. So I have a lot of friends. We might not agree on stuff,
but like we will sit there and we will politely debate it
yeah.
back and forth. And if somebody mentions something that is compelling enough for me to change my opinion, or I don't like to use the word change, adapt, for me to adapt my opinion and allow my opinion on a certain topic to grow, then like shake hands, because like that was a phenomenal conversation that was worth having. If that doesn't happen, it's still a great conversation when you're able to both vocalize how you feel about something, agree to disagree, and there's no animosity. The issue is when you surround yourself with people that try to change your perception of reality to match their own, so that they're able to feel significantly more validated in how they're perceiving the world.
Well, same thing. I've seen a lot of memes too of, oh, you don't need a degree for this, and you don't need it just because you have a degree. Like, and I go, and I just told you I have a newfound respect, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, you do realize that's insulting to
Incredible.
Other people.
Yeah.
Like, so it's okay for you to say it because you didn't pursue that higher education
or whatever. Yeah, they're
but
looking.
But then you're bashing someone else that did.
They're looking for validation on the fact that you
I
know,
don't. I don't bash people for their choices, or if they don't, I'm not telling everyone, oh, you need to, I don't respect people based on education, but then don't bash me for attaining it, or other people
well,
that have attained it.
I think the issue is, like, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones,
right?
So, obviously, this person is probably, at some point in their life, has been, you know, led to believe that they're inadequate because they didn't pursue some form of post-secondary.
Yeah, they're projecting.
So they're projecting their own insecurities out into the world and hoping other like-minded people validate that they're okay. Like, probably not a good thing to do. But,
well,
like, then again, like, why are you doing it?
Right.
Do you
like,
know? Do they understand why they're doing it? Probably not.
Do they understand that anybody who pursues higher education, it's not only a financial commitment and investment, it's a time investment.
Oh, massively.
Like, you have to be completely focused. You sacrifice a lot of summers, a lot of going out, a lot of socializing, a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
And so, instead of saying something like that, you should probably just be like, wow, like, I, you know, that's commendable that you would pursue that.
We're going back to the topic of like people just need to stop comparing their lives
yeah.
to other people's lives.
Like that wasn't your path, but
yeah.
that's someone else's path.
Everybody has been brought up into this world into incredibly different circumstances, regardless of what it is. It could be to the extreme. Siblings have completely different lives. They're different people. They like different things. So this goes, in my opinion, to everything. It's like sexuality, you know, mental health, absolutely every subject. Like, just, I'm a big fan of like mind your own business.
Yeah.
Like I respond to people by how they perceive how they, you know, express themselves and how they bring themselves out in the world. So like if somebody's a really nice, respectful person, like why do I care who they date?
Exactly.
Why do I care what kind of education they have? It doesn't matter. It's like this person's a very nice person. This person has the potential to help me on a personal growth journey and for me to help them in a personal growth journey. So like, great, let's get along. But like, if we don't drive together and like, you know, we don't resonate, like, okay, like move on. Like I don't need to judge the person for the life they're living.
I know, like I don't. I just find it, I see them more and more often and it's just like, okay, well that, you know, that's offensive, but okay.
Yeah, but like it's, it, yeah, we're in my like we're at the point where, with Twitter and you know all the social medias, everything anybody says is offending somebody, right? So you like the way I like to look at things is consciously. So like, is that person consciously trying to offend you? Or have they released a statement and for some reason you have been offended by it? If that person is maliciously actually targeting you, that's a different statement.
I never respond, so I don't think it's personal. I just think it's ignorant.
Yeah.
I think it's just like, it's always typically the people that haven't pursued it. So, like, why are you even talking about it?
Yeah.
If your choice was not to do that, why do you care about what other people are doing?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, just live your own life. I don't know. And meditate. Definitely meditate.
Yeah, meditate.
I'm going to need to meditate.
Okay, we went an hour. Wow. Well, that's good. We're going to sign off now because my dog is, I don't know, having a seizure. Okay, till next time.
Bye, guys.